morning and welcome to the 425th episode of Travel It Radio. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with my friend and co-host, Mary Ellen Nugent Lee, and this is the 10th season of Travel It Radio, the show that lets you enjoy the pleasures of travel from the comfort of your armchair.
Every week at this time, we talk to people representing destinations, hotels, airlines, railroads, car rental companies, and others in the world of travel and hospitality, from authors and bloggers to broadcasters and publicists. If it's got anything to do with travel, it's got everything to do with Travel Itch Radio.
And our honored guest tonight is Sue Presby, co-owner of the Mount Washington Cog Railway, which I've ridden several times and love. Welcome back, Sue, to Travel Itch Radio.
Hi, Mary Ellen. Hi, Dan. I'm so happy to be back with you. And I know that you told me, Dan, that this is your 425th show, I think you said. We've got a little ways to catch up with you. The COG is only celebrating its 152nd year, but we're going to try and catch up with you.
Okay. Well, we're in our 10th year, but lots of shows every year. And as Travel Itch Radio listeners know, I love trains, trolleys, and anything that runs on tracks, especially if it's outdoors, full-size, and pulled by steam. The Mount Washington Cog Railway certainly qualifies. So first, let's start with some basic points, Sue. Where are you located?
We are located in the heart of the White Mountains of New Hampshire, which is you can either get here by route 93 or Route 91. To give you a little bit of context, we're 165 miles from Boston, 175 miles from Montreal, 250 miles from Hartford, or 330 miles from New York City.
And since New Hampshire has some serious winter weather, do you operate all year?
We did not in the past. However, this past year we decided that we were going to run part of our trip. You can go to Wambeck Station, which is about a third of the way up. The base camp is at 2,700 feet above sea level. Wambeck is 4,000 feet. So what we decided to do was run to Wambeck, and we figured what we'd run only on weekends. However, everybody had pandemic fever and wanted to get out, so we had such demand that we actually ran 7 days a week this entire winter, and we have plans to do that again this year.
Wow.
That's great. And what are your peak and bargain seasons?
Well, the peak season, it's different. I would say from once the kids get out of school, so towards the end of June until the middle of August is probably the peak time for family travel. The peak time for our tourism market, our group market and the leaf peepers would be from about the week after Labor Day until the week after Columbus Day, although this year it has been peak since we reopened. So I would say May and June is the slowest time to come as far as the availability. The rest of the year is really busy.
Wow.
And I know you still have some trains that operate under steam power, so please share.
Yes, we do. We still have two of our steam engines. The rest of our fleet is biodiesel. We run them twice a day. We run them the first train of the day and then this last train probably about 3 or 3:30, and I can't remember running on the half hour or the hour right now. And the reason we can't run them more during the day is a timing issue, because the steam trains are just a little bit slower going up the mountain. They go about 4 miles an hour, going up, and about 6 miles an hour coming down, whereas the biodiesel engines are a constant 5 miles up, 5 miles an hour up and 5 miles an hour down. So we don't have to worry about that. But they do run twice a day from about the beginning of May until the middle of October, and then the steam engines go into hibernation for the rest of the year.
And Sue, you're a lawyer by profession. So how does a nice girl like you become a railroad mogul?
Well, my husband is also a lawyer, and I actually met him my very first day of law school. He was a year ahead of me, and we dated off and on through law school, and when he graduated in 1980, I graduated in 1983, he and three other families bought the Cog Railway then, and we kind of went back and forth, and then we finally kind of got our acts together, and we decided, so I married him and the Cog Railway in 1994, and it's been that way ever since.
Oh, that's so sweet. Now, do people need reservations to ride the train, and how far in advance should they book?
Absolutely. It's not required to book your reservations in advance, although we can't stress enough how important it is to do that. Some people, we're much busier than we have been probably 20 years ago. If someone had ridden there as a kid, now they want to bring their children up. People have come and they haven't made reservations, and they've had to wait maybe 2 or 3 hours to get a seat on a train or even have to book the next day. As far as how far out to book, I know everybody wants to come on a day when it's crystal clear blue skies and they can see forever. So they try and book as close to when they're coming as they possibly can. What I tell people is whether the sun is out, whether it's windy, whether it's snowing, you're going to have an incredible trip riding on this train that has been running since 1869. So it's kind of, I know I'm hedging on the answer, but the answer is yes, you should make reservations, and yes, you should make them soon.
Okay, and as an amateur weather buff, Sue, I'm fascinated by the fact that Mount Washington is the highest peak east of the Mississippi and is known for wild and crazy weather. Is it true it can snow any day of the year?
Absolutely. Actually, the last snow that we had for the 2020 winter season was on May 13th. It was snowing then. And we had our first snow of what I consider this season coming up on July 29th. Now, that isn't at the base. That is at the summit of the mountain. And part of the reason for that is there are actually three weather patterns or three weather currents that converge at the summit. So there's all these different currents that are coming in at the same time. So weather can change very, very quickly on the summit. You could be there and it would be totally socked in, and all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, it's clear. The highest recorded wind recorded by man was recorded on the summit of Mount Washington in 1934, and that was 231 miles an hour.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa.
We are talking with Sue Presby, co-owner of the Mount Washington Cogwheel Railway. Sue, do you ever not run a train because of bad weather?
We can't run to the summit if the wind gusts hit 70 miles an hour, but we have two different stations. We have Wambeck Station, which I talked about with our winter operation, which we have what we call lean-tos. They're three-sided buildings, and there's a fire pit, and there's actually a porch where you can look down into the valley and take pictures. The next stop up, which is at 5,100 feet above sea level, the top of the mountain, I forgot to mention this, is at 6,288 feet. So at 5,100 feet above sea level is our skyline switch. So depending on where the wind is gusting, we can actually go there. But if the wind is really gusting, we go as far as Wambeck. But we didn't run. I was trying to think of this when I knew I was talking to you tonight. And I think we didn't run actually 2 days within the past probably 10 years. And one was almost, I think it was, I don't know if it was a hurricane or hurricane force winds where we had all the tree damage in New Hampshire. We didn't run that day, and we didn't run the next day because we had to do track inspections. But other than that, we normally run at least part way.
Wow. And Sue, when you run the steam locomotive, does it burn wood or coal? And how much?
When the cog was first built and when it first made its maiden run in 1860, steam. And that continued until 1910. And then they converted it to a coal-fired boiler. And believe it or not, it's a 6-mile round trip. So it's 3 miles up and 3 miles down. To do that 6-mile round trip, it takes a ton of coal and 1,000 gallons of water to do that. And in comparison, our biodiesel engines take 18 to 22 gallons of biodiesel fuel.
Oh, wow. So have you had issues with environmentalists who don't want to deal with soot and other unclean residue released by the steam locomotive?
We have. I mean, people see the black smoke, and they naturally assume that we're polluting the air. Are we putting pollution into the air? I mean, when you drive your car, you're putting pollution into the air.
Mm-hmm.
We make an effort to buy very clean coal. I will say that once we built our first biodiesel engine in 2008, And as a result of that, we also have a trail running up beside our tracks, and we use that for maintenance work. But with the biodiesel engines, we have been able to send the engines up, even in the middle of the night, to rescue hikers, people who have gotten injured on the mountain. We had, when we had our 150th celebration, a gentleman fell and was and had a serious leg injury. And in the middle of our party, we had the Forest Service jumped on our train with our general manager, and up they went, loaded the gentleman on the train, and came back down. So we have kind of the complaining has gone down because they understand how helpful we can be.
That's nice. And since parts for your old-time trains are hard to come by, is it true you make your own?
This is the part that I am the most proud of. I'm the daughter of a machinist. So the fact that we build our own trains is magical to me. I'm going to tell you a little story. When my husband, my now husband, he brought me to the cog to show it to me, and I'm very much a girly girl, and I have on my shoes, and, you know, I'm dressed nice. And he says, we're going to go in the shop and be very careful when you're walking around in there because – and you know when you walk in, there's a smell that always makes you think, like, wait a minute, it's baked bread. It makes you think of your mother, or chocolate chip cookies or flowers makes you think of a certain relative. I walked into the shop, and I smelled the cutting oil from the machines. I saw all the steel shavings on the floor. I felt like I was home because I had grown up in that environment my entire life. So, yes, we have always built what I call the biodiesels, from brain to train. That idea was actually conceived of by one of the gentlemen who works for us, Mr. Al Laprad. So we designed this train, and we built everything right there. And the shop building at that time was about 12,000 very inefficient square feet to work in, and that was spread out over three buildings, our car shop, our engine shop, our machine shop, and our track shop. So we built that, and while we had those buildings, we actually have built seven biodiesel engines since 2008. And we, over the course of the pandemic, we had started building a new maintenance facility shop, which is 35,000 square feet, which we ended up finishing during the pandemic. So we can now fit all of our engines in there. We work on everything in there. We have air casters. We have overhead cranes. We can run all of our machinery in there. So it's a much more efficient system. All of the woodwork, which Dan has seen in our coaches, we build the coaches also, is hand-done at our shop, which, as you can tell, I could probably talk about that part for an hour. But it's absolutely incredible. Every time I get on the train or I take someone on the train, that is the first thing that I show them because I'm the most proud of that.
Oh, that's fantastic. And where do you find your crews, especially your engineers?
Most of them are local, and that's just, I think it's just a matter of proximity. You start out as a brakeman, you train to be a brakeman, and then from there you can train to be an engineer. I mean, we would absolutely love anybody who's listening who has an interest in steam trains and cog trains or in anything like that who wants to come up and apply for a job and train to be a brakeman or an engineer. We're absolutely looking forward to having you step onto our property. But it's local people.
That's fantastic.
We're talking with Sue Presby, co-owner of the Mount Washington Cog Railway. Sue, there's a new hotel called the Glen House at the base of Mount Washington. Has that been a boon for your business?
Actually, it hasn't, because that's actually on the opposite side of the mountain. So without traffic, it would take somebody about an hour to get from the Glen House over to the Cog. I'm assuming, and I don't have facts on this, but I'm assuming that people that are staying at the Glen House are more apt to either drive themselves up or take the shuttle up the auto road. I mean, I'm sure they probably enjoy things on that side of the mountain. There are some people who are here for a few days or a week vacationing, and they want to see both sides of the mountain, so we may get some of them, but I don't really think that the hotel has generated much business for us.
Well, personally speaking, have you tried the Mount Washington Auto Road and gotten a bumper sticker that says, this car climbed Mount Washington?
Wayne and I have actually done the auto road because before we were running in the winter, sometimes there would be meetings after we had closed because the railroad was only running until the end of October, until probably 10 years ago. So if we had a meeting at the summit, then we would go and take the auto road up. We've driven our own car up. We have not taken their van. We've driven, I think we drove a Mitsubishi Eclipse up there one time. And I don't do bumper stickers for anything. So, no, we don't have a bumper sticker on our car. It's nothing against the auto road. I just don't do bumper stickers.
So, Sue, who rides your train? In other words, you know, do you get New Englanders, Canadians, Europeans, or people from the rest of the United States?
In a normal year, other than a pandemic, we do a lot of Canadian business. That has been a very large market for us, especially with the dollar. Depending on how the dollar is fluctuating, that determines a lot of how our Canadian traffic is. With our proximity to Montreal and Quebec, Quebec is 4 hours from us, so we really have done a lot of the Canadian business over the years. Massachusetts and Boston is, of course, our core market. We're starting to make inroads into Hartford in that Connecticut area, and we're starting to make some inroads into New York City. As far as our international traffic, the UK has been a huge market for us, and it has been. The White Mountains has done a really good job of marketing the entire region, so we have benefited from that. I've done sales missions to Australia, to Japan, and where else? We were going to go to South Korea, but then the pandemic hit. So I think it was in 2018 or 2019, we had a map that was downstairs by our museum of the world. And I believe that year we had customers from every country except the North and the South Pole. We had someone from everywhere on the map.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is a worldwide destination.
Oh, that's great.
We are talking to Sue Presby, co-owner of the Mount Washington Cobb Railway. And you are listening to Travel It's Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. We're on iTunes, blogtalkradio.com, and Facebook. Check out the archive show at your convenience.
Now, Sue, you talked about the pandemic. What's your overall impression of how the pandemic impacted the Mount Washington Cobb Railway?
As with everybody, I mean, the pandemic really just put the hammer down on all of tourism. The governor of New Hampshire, all non-essential business was closed as of March, and we were going to open in April. And we had a project where we were building this maintenance facility, so we were under obligations. We were actually, and we couldn't reopen for passengers until July. So that was quite a blow to everybody. We were able to keep most of our staff who wanted to work on. And what we had done, we do track work during the season once the snow melts further up and we can get on to that. We can start doing our track work that we do for maintenance yearly. And we were in a project that we were replacing the original 25-pound rail that was on the railroad to 100-pound rail. So if we were able to run, we would have had to schedule our track crew around trains so that everything kind of synchronized. So believe it or not, the pandemic was a benefit as far as the re-railing went because we were able to do that without any impediment and having to disrupt the flow of our customers. It was bad in that we weren't having income coming in, but when we reopened in July, we had 50% capacity is what we were mandated that we could have, and everybody had to wear masks. So we ran for the rest of the year, even through our winter operation, at 50% capacity. When we opened in May, we did not go. We were, I believe at that point, it was still 50% capacity, and then they upped it. We did not go to full capacity, I don't believe, until I think in the last couple of weeks. And people can wear masks. The CDC has said that no one has to wear now as of right now, but people do wear masks. We've encouraged people to wear masks if they're feeling uncomfortable. Our employees wear masks in the building. So it was bad, but we were lucky. None of our employees got sick, and no one that we know of got sick as a passenger.
Terrific. Sue, let's talk history. The Cog has to be one of the oldest continuously operating attractions on the planet. We know it started in 1869, but how did it start?
Well, the gentleman who we're going to give credit to for that is a gentleman named Sylvester Marsh. He was born in Campton, New Hampshire, and he went on to Chicago when he became a grown-up and went into the meatpacking industry. He got married and had a family and moved back to the Boston area. And he and his pastor in 1857 decided they were going to come to the White Mountains. He had, I don't know if it was dyspepsia, he had a stomach ailment, so he wanted some fresh air. So they came up from Boston and decided to hike the mountain. So they got up to Skyline, and as I said earlier, the weather can change on a dime. And sure enough, they had started out blue skies, warm and sunny. It changed to hurricane-force winds and sleet and freezing rain. So they somehow managed to hike to the summit of the mountain, and they found the Tip Top House, which is the oldest hiker hostel, I believe, in North America. It was opened in 1853, which basically was a hotel. They camped out there for the night, and as Sylvester is looking over his life, he says, you know what, there's got to be a better way to get to the summit of this mountain. So he went back and started trying to figure out the best way to get there, and he figured out that it had to be a train. But we have such a steep incline on Mount Washington. The average grade on the mountain is 25%. The highest grade on the mountain is a Jacob's Ladder, and that is 37.1%. And what that basically means is when you're on Jacob's Ladder, we have 70 passenger coaches. The person who is sitting in the front seat of the coach is 14 feet higher off the ground than the person in the very last coach. So you can imagine if you had a regular engine, because the cog train, I have to back up here, the cog train does not pull the coach up the mountain. The cog engine is behind the passenger coach and pushes it up the mountain. So you can imagine if with the 25% grade or a 37% grade, if you had an engine that was pulling the coach up, it just wouldn't work. So he went round and round and tried to figure out how you could get a train up. And he knew of cog gears, so he figured maybe that would work. And a cog gear is different. A cog train is different from a regular train. And even with our train, we have the wheels that ride on the outside rails. But what is really powering the train up the hill is the cog gear, which is in the center rack. And that works very much like a bicycle chain and a sprocket. So the teeth of the gear go into basically the chain and pull the engine up the hill. So he worked on that, discovered it works. So in 1866, they started working on the railroad, and July 3rd, 1869, the train took its maiden voyage, and we've been running since then. So as I said, 152nd year this year. And it is the very first mountain climbing train in the world. I know a lot of people think of Pikes Peak in Colorado, and they think some people have heard more about that, but hopefully they'll now know more about our railroad, or Mount Rigi in Switzerland. Actually, the gentleman came over from Switzerland, and Sylvester Marsh gave him the plans for our cog, and that is what they use Mount Rigi over in Switzerland.
So how many trains a day do you run? And also, what can passengers find at the summit?
How many trains do we run? Let me think about this. We can do 3 trains an hour, and it depends on the season. Like in the early season, we just don't have the demand, so we run for 3 hours. I think we run at 9, 11, and 2. And then when we get into the busy part of the season, we'll start running every hour on the hour starting at 8. So 8 until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And sometimes once we get into like late August and into the beginning of September and October, we will run maybe a 4 o'clock train if we're extremely busy. And like I said, there are 70 passenger coaches, so we can do 210 people an hour. I think yesterday my husband told me that we did 1,500 and something people yesterday. And at the summit, as I said, there's the Tip Top House. There are incredible views. On a clear day, you can actually see 100 miles. You can see into Portland, Maine Harbor and see the glint of some of the cruise ships that are there. You can see into Canada. When they had the awful fires in Canada, I think, 5 years ago, we could see the smoke. You can see into all the New England states from the summit. There's also the summit of the mountain is actually a state park. So there is the Sherman Adams Building, which houses the Weather Museum. It houses a gift shop and a snack shop. And then there's a lot of places just to walk around and take in the views from the summit. And there's also the actual peak of Mount Washington with a sign that says, 6,288 feet, which hikers and people who take the train all, try and get their picture taken at the summit sign.
I did.
Yeah, that's right, you did.
So, Sue, looking ahead, what's new and what's planned for the Mount Washington Cog?
Well, we have two really, well, I think they're really cool things. One is a cool thing for the general public. There is a running group called the Rock Hoppers. And June 25th of next year, they're going to be doing a race, which is, I guess the type of race it's called. It's a mountain race, and it's going to be called Race the Cog. So runners will exactly. They're going to be running up our hiking trail, and they are going to try and beat the engine up the mountain. People can also ride in the trains to be part of the train to see if they beat the runners or the runners beat the mountain. Ironically enough, I think it was 2 weeks ago, there were a group of four gentlemen who actually did this. And I don't know if they were prepping for the race or not, but they ran it. The biodiesel engine takes about it takes about 20 minutes to get to the summit. So on that particular day, we had three biodiesel engines going. So they leave, like, sporadically. So we have one that will leave at 3 o'clock, one that leaves at 3:05, one that leaves at 3:10, just so that they're not all, you know, right behind one another. So when they left, the four people made it between 49 and 59 minutes to the summit of Mount Washington, which I have no idea how they did it. The person who made it in 49 minutes, I guess, beat the third train that was going up the mountain. And then they raced back down the mountain, and they made it in 22 minutes.
Whoa.
So that is something that's going to be going on next summer, which is the first time we've ever hosted that kind of an event. We're hoping it's going to be an annual thing. If you go to our website, it gives you the details on how you could register for that race. I don't think if you're someone who runs around the block, you should be registering for this race. But if you're a diehard runner who's in great shape, I think it would be something to absolutely put on your resume for running. The other thing that we're doing is there's a community college up here called the White Mountain Community College. We are entering into a partnership with them. They are building a new diesel mechanic facility here in Littleton. And what they're going to do is, and they're basically in that facility, they are working on on-road trucks and heavy equipment diesel. So it's going to be a working lab there. But they're actually going to send interns to us so that they will learn how to work on diesel trains. And we think it's a great thing because one thing everybody wants to do, whether it's in tourism or any business, is you want staff retention, and you also want to build the next generation of people within your company. We want the next generation of Coggers to be part of our family. So we just saw this as an absolute win-win situation. So the building is starting now. I think they're going to have the first classes in 2023. We will be going to their facility and teaching some classes. They will also be coming to our facility, and some of our guys will be giving some classes and equipment that we have that they don't have. So those are the two things that are coming up. Pardon me?
2 minutes.
Okay.
Just dropping a hint.
And that's the two things. Those are the two things that are coming up.
Well, okay, we need to know your website.
Yes,
the website
is
www.thecog.com. That's www.thecog.com.
Our special guest tonight has been Sue Presby, co-owner of the fabulous Mount Washington Cog Railway. I can't wait to ride it again. Thank you, Sue, for being our guest on Travel It's Radio.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I look forward to seeing you again, Dan and Mary Ellen. You need to come up.
I do.
Okay, and that's it for this edition of Travel It's Radio. Next week, same time, same station, same writer, same announcers, we'll have another visit with our longtime friend, San Francisco-based travel writer Nick Contis. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with my beautiful and talented co-host, Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee, saying thank you for your time this time until next time. Good night and stay safe.